Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Thursday, September 29th. Today, Colorado Sun politics reporters Sandra Fish and Jesse Aaron Paul discuss the recent tax revenue forecast and what this means for the 2023-24 fiscal budget. Before we begin, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Xcel Energy. Colorado has some of the nation's best wind and solar resources, and Xcel Energy is putting them to work for you. Their nation-leading wind energy expansion is reducing our carbon footprint while producing some of the lowest-cost electricity on the Colorado grid. Learn more at xcelenergy.com. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. For three decades, Ute bands in present-day western Colorado resisted the encroachment of Mexican and American interlopers. But when faced with no alternative, they surrendered. Federal agents then transformed them into farmers. Ultimately, their communal frustration and despair found a gruesome outlet on this day in 1879 when members of the Yamparica faction killed Agent Nathan C. Meeker and 10 other men at the White River Agency in modern-day Rio Blanco County. Well known as the founder of Greeley, Meeky accepted appointment as the White River agent in 1878. He envisioned remaking the Utes as Americans, but his disdain for native culture caused animosity among the Yamparica. Before we continue, the Colorado Sun invites you to attend Ski Area Bosses with outdoors reporter Jason Blevins virtually on October 6th. Hear from industry experts about lessons learned over the last few seasons, challenges about climate, housing, and much more. Visit coloradosun.com/events to register for free. Next, our feature story.
Hey, Jesse. It's good to have you back here. We're recording our weekly politics chat. I wanted to ask you, we had some big news last week, annual revenue forecast. What does this mean for the state's budget?
Yeah, so I took a brief break from the election trail to check in with the state legislature, which is preparing to write its 2023-24 fiscal year budget. So this wouldn't actually start until July 1st, 2023. So we got a lot of time, but when you write a $40 billion budget, it takes, you know, more than a few days to write this thing. So the budget process is getting started here in just a few weeks. And each quarter, the legislature is presented with an economic and tax revenue forecast. So Thursday's was the latest one, and there was a lot of people there wanting to closely watch it, given what's going on with interest rates and the economy and risk of the recession. And it was kind of a mixed bag of news for the lawmakers, but mostly bad news. You know, the risk of recession has risen over the past few months, and there's a lot of economic uncertainty out there. It's kind of unclear about how much revenue the state can expect to receive and will have to spend. And then there's all this Tabor stuff that's going on, taxpayer bill of rights constraints that are going to be working on lawmakers this year. And I think there's getting to be a lot of anxiety about what the budget's going to look like.
That Tabor stuff is so complicated. And there are even external factors at work, right? Like some of the ballot measures could have an impact on the state budget that under Tabor could be harmful.
Yeah, so maybe I'll start with like the 10,000 foot view. So for those who don't know the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, you need to know it because it's pretty important in how it affects your government services and daily life. But the main two things that it does is it requires voter approval of all tax increases in Colorado. And it also limits the amount of growth that government can have and the amount of money it can spend to an increased rate each year of inflation plus population. And it gets a little complicated. You know, it's an inflation rate plus a population growth rate added together. But the thing that you really need to know right now is that the inflation rate that's used to budget or figure out what's called the Tabor cap, the limit on how much government can spend, is based off of the previous calendar year. So 6 months before the budget actually begins for that fiscal year. So right now, when we're in this kind of crazy inflation environment where inflation is changing really quickly, the legislature's, the amount of money that it can spend based on the Tabor cap is calculated by a lagging inflation rate. So it's a compounding issue. So as inflation continues, you know, we're building off of an inflation rate that's lagging behind, and lawmakers have been really nervous about what this is going to mean for the next fiscal year. And it sounds like the chickens are going to kind of come home to roost. And the forecast was what lawmakers were told, the members of the Joint Budget Committee who write the state budget, is that they'll have $1 billion more to spend next year than they did the previous year. And that sounds really good. But when you look at what inflation has done to the budget and you start to factor that in, they're only going to have about $85 million to spend in new money. And that's a best case estimate. And again, that's if there is no recession. And if there is a recession, all bets are off. But lawmakers already feel like this $85 million doesn't really even exist. If inflation continues, there's possible that they're going to have to make cuts to existing programs and spending. And it could be kind of a headache. I know I was talking to the governor's budget chief who's putting together the governor's budget proposal, which will be released in November. And she was pretty nervous about what this means. Certainly state lawmakers are looking at some tough decisions. Now, that's Tabor. Secondarily, what we also have going on here is, you know, the effect that a few new ballot measures or ballot measures are going to be on the November ballot could have. One is Proposition 121, which would cut the state's income tax rate and, you know, siphon about $400 million, I think, in tax revenue from the state budget. Not a big deal in years when you go over the Tabor cap. If we don't have a recession, that's forecast to happen for the next few years. By $1 billion, maybe more. It depends on who you ask. The governor's office thinks it'll be less. Nonpartisan staff at the legislature think it'll be more. And then you also have Proposition 123, which isn't a new tax increase or a tax cut, but what it would do is set aside 0.1% of taxable income in Colorado for affordable housing, up to about $290 million a year. Again, if there is a Tabor cap excess here, or Tabor surplus is another way that oftentimes people will put it, it wouldn't affect the budget and cut into the existing amount of money that lawmakers have. But in years where the Tabor cap is not exceeded, the legislature is still on the hook for that $290 million. And as I mentioned, like there's a very good risk that we could be heading into a recession given federal monetary policy, rising interest rates meant to tamp down on inflation, slow the economy, and in which case, you know, lawmakers would have to find $300 million out of that budget that I just mentioned is already kind of strapped for cash. So, you know, there's a lot of interesting stuff that's going on here on the side of the election that we have going on. So we're trying to kind of keep our heads focused on both these things because they're really important for Colorado. And I did my best to explain all that stuff, but I'm a much better writer than I am speaker. So I encourage you to read our stories on this if you want more details.
Yeah, it fascinates me that Tabor was passed 30 years ago this year. And when the population of the state was very different, the state was like two-thirds the size of what it is now. And a lot of our governing is done by ballot initiatives, so, and also elections. And we're less than six weeks off to the general election on November 8th, and ballots will be here. We'll be getting them in like 3 weeks. So kind of exciting.
Yeah, a lot of tough decisions for people this year outside of the candidates. I mean, I think people are going to have to look hard at some of these fiscal ballot measures and try and decide what's best for the state. And just a quick aside, you know, Tabor is so important. It's the third rail in Colorado politics. If people want to know more, I really recommend the Taxman podcast from Colorado Public Radio, which I think is kind of like a prerequisite for any Tabor interested people. That just explains the background of the 1992 constitutional amendment. The guy behind it, Douglas Bruce, really fascinating character. Can't recommend that enough. Props to our friends over at CPR News for making such a long-lasting, interesting podcast. So switching back to the election, Fish, you and I have been tracking some interesting Democratic spending in the Senate race. I know we've been like waiting for this, the coming of the TV ads, and finally they are starting to arrive. So,
you know, last week we talked about all of a sudden this super PAC backing Republican Senate candidate Joe O'Day was dropping $2 million over 2 weeks, which is a significant amount. 2 days later, we see Gifford's PAC, which advocates for gun control against gun-related violence, dropping more than $2.5 million on ads that criticize O'Day on gun issues. And a new, we call them a pop-up PAC, because we're not going to know anything about who their money's coming from until October 15th. But 53 Peaks is this new super PAC, and they're spending more than $2.5 million, I think it's closer to 2.7, on TV ads attacking Joe O'Day on his abortion position. So it's kind of interesting because it's like, okay, we're coming out here on the Republican side attacking Michael Bennett with a bunch of money, and two Democratic groups show up and say, hey, we'll double that.
Yeah, we're starting to see this interesting spending. It's still not keeping up with previous election cycles. And again, you and I have reported that that's a big indicator that national Democrats and Republicans don't see this race as competitive. Michael Bennet was always sort of favored to win this thing. And the amount of money kind of suggests that people haven't seen shifts in the polls. There was an interesting poll that came out yesterday from a Republican firm that showed Michael Bennet almost above 50% in the polls, which would suggest that the race is unwinnable for Joe O'Dea at this point. But, you know, things can change. We still got about a month until ballots drop and then 3 or 4 weeks of voting that happens. So still some interesting stuff to come on there. And you and I, 53 peaks, let's unpack this a little bit because it's kind of an interesting pack. We've seen Democrats use this tactic before where they start a group between campaign finance filing periods. So we don't know who's funding them. They run a bunch of ads and then we're going to find out on October 15th who's funding this group. But like, what do we know about them? And do we have any sense of like who's behind this?
You know, it's hard to tell. And they're being very coy. Their spokeswoman is Ellen Dunn, who's done a lot of work on the soft side money in Democratic politics for a while. And she's also done a lot of work for abortion rights supporters. So she's worked on personhood ballot initiatives, opposing those and doing, you know, this sort of spokespersoning on these things. So it could be Planned Parenthood votes that the advertisements were purchased by a buyer that shares that also represents Planned Parenthood votes, but they also represent Senate Majority PAC. Could be Senate Majority PAC. It could be, you know, it could be some wealthy individuals here in Colorado who just decided to step in. That PAC was formed in pretty late in August.
Right.
And it's a pretty common practice. I feel like what the deal is here is that there isn't as much outside spending. The big Democratic groups are not coming in here. It's kind of a second tier thing, but they're willing to spend somebody out there is willing to spend some money to protect Michael Bennet. This is the first independent spending that Giffords has done this year on this contest, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, you know, one of the interesting things I'll mention about Giffords, and we've seen this kind of in a few different races in Colorado, is they oftentimes will come into Colorado and spend a bunch of money in races that they think that they are sure to win. And part of the reason for that is that if you win these races and you're a PAC like Giffords, you know, which supports tougher gun regulations named after former Arizona Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, a Democrat who was wounded in a Tucson shooting in 2011, then you can point to donors and you can point to other candidates and say, look, this is a winning issue. So I'm a little curious to see if that's what they're going for here, if this is kind of a way to put an end to this race and just make sure that Bennet wins it and by a wide margin, or if they feel like, you know, he's legitimately at risk. Again, the polling hasn't really played that out, but we'll see if this moves things. We're going to see a few more polls, I think, in the next couple of weeks. I've heard about some things that are out in the field, so it'll be interesting to kind of figure out where and how these new TV ads and the spending will affect things. So speaking of spending, because you and I like to have some fun sometimes, you did a really interesting story today looking at the spending on TV ads and Broncos games. And like, I don't know if everyone else out there is like me, but sometimes I'll just sit there and be like, I wonder how much people are spending, you know, to get this 30-second spot in front of, you know, 20 million people on Monday Night Football. And it turns out it is a crap ton of money. Tell us what you found.
It's a fascinating, it's always... In the time that I've been tracking this, which is since 2012, the Broncos game has always been the big political buy. And it illustrates some points that, for instance, those super PACs have to pay a huge premium over candidates because federal law says that candidates get the lowest rate, the lowest advertised unit rate or something. There is going to be an ad on Sunday's game against, I love to say this, the 0-3 Raiders. And the super PAC supporting Joe O'Dea, American Policy Fund, is spending $150,000 to advertise during that game.
Wow.
$150,000. You could do a lot with that money. They spent $75,000 to advertise on this past Sunday night football game on NBC. And the candidates are spending less. Like, it was interesting because Barbara Kirkmeyer's spot aired in the middle of the game and she paid $60,000 in the Denver market. You know, Polis and Bennet had spots, I think, before after the game and paid $30,000 each. You know, those spots are so much cheaper in like Grand Junction or even Colorado Springs.
Right.
Polis and Kirkmeyer are each going to pay $70,000 for this Sunday's game, though. I'm trying not to talk about the quality of the football in these games.
I know it's kind of interesting. Like, some people watch the games for the games and other people watch them for the political ads, you know, like you and I. But yeah, one of the things I found really interesting in your story was just, you know, the discrepancy in how much you pay depending on what part of the state you're in. So, you know, I think one ad during the Broncos game in the Grand Junction market, which is obviously much smaller than Colorado Springs or Denver, was like $1,100. Colorado Springs was like, you know, $7,500. And then it's $150,000 to run, you know, an ad up here in Denver.
Yeah. You know, the bigger point is that you have a captive market. And let's face it, the Denver Metro, those TV stations cover the largest chunk of the population in the state. Most people are sitting on their butts on the couch watching the Denver Broncos on Sunday. And you've got a captive audience, unless the audience goes up to get another beer during your commercial, in which case, oh well. But you're getting a lot of eyeballs on that. And especially among older voters, you know, male voters that sometimes are undecided. So for some of these groups, it's a big deal. It's interesting that, you know, Giffords and 53 Peaks aren't airing ads on these 14 games. And I think that indicates that they're looking at aiming for a different demographic there.
Yeah. Well, I think you and I will probably be watching the game for the game on Sunday. And let's just hope for the Broncos fans out there that it's not another Broncos game where people might want to pay $150,000 not to watch the Broncos. Thanks for chatting with me today, Fish.
Yeah, talk to you later, Jesse.
Read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. The body of a famed U.S. extreme skier who went missing this week after she was swept off her feet in an avalanche on the world's eighth highest mountain was recovered Wednesday and transported to Nepal's capital. 49-year-old Hillary Nelson of Telluride was skiing down the 26,775-foot summit of Mount Manaslu with her partner Jim Morrison on Monday when she fell off the mountain. Several Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management employees are voicing concerns about equity, diversity, and inclusion within the state agency. According to a memo released Monday, the diversity statements were made as the department investigated separate claims accusing its leadership of creating a toxic workplace environment. Many employees who corroborated workplace violations also accused the worker who lodged the original complaint of making insensitive racial remarks in the workplace. That led the agency's executive director to note several new and concerning statements related to diversity and equity, including inappropriate remarks by the original complainant. Political action committees shell out hundreds of thousands of dollars to reach Colorado voters during Denver Broncos games in election years, and 2022 is no exception. The American Policy Fund, a political action committee aligned with Republicans, will pay $150,000 to air its ad attacking U.S. Senator Michael Bennett during Sunday's game against the Las Vegas Raiders. According to the Colorado Sun's records, that appears to be the most costly single ad in recent years. The committee already spent $75,000 to air the anti-Bennett ad during the Broncos' win over San Francisco. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again tomorrow. The Colorado Sun is nonpartisan and completely independent. We're always dedicated to telling the in-depth stories we need today more than ever. And the Sun is supported by readers and listeners like you. Right now, you can head to coloradosun.com and become a member, starting at $5 per month. And if you bump it up to $20 per month, you'll get access to our politics newsletter, The Unaffiliated, as well as our outdoors newsletter, The Outsider, and our new health and environment newsletter, The Temperature. All three exclusive newsletters delivered to your inbox every week.